says his department will continue to consult with the Department of Justice about it. Authorities in the Dominican Republic confirming they have found the bodies of a New York couple who went missing on March 27th. Investigators believe Portia Ravenel and her boyfriend Orlando Moore of Mount Vernon were involved in a car crash after checking out of their hotel. Ravenel initially survived the crash but was found unconscious on the side of the road without any ID. She died in a hospital on April 4th. Moore's remains were found in the water not far from where their rental car was found submerged. And Israel is planning to make history today as a small Israeli spacecraft is to touch down on the moon in what would be the first privately funded mission ever to land on the moon. It's supposed to touch down in the Sea of Serenity between 3 and 4 p.m. Eastern Time. And for USA Radio News, I'm Chris Barnes.
Hey, Pat, did you know between the two of us, we know how to screw in a light bulb?
Come on, Steve. We can do better than that. Well, at least I can. Tell you what, you sit there and look pretty, and I'll fix it.
Listen to you, big guy. Better yet, let's get everyone to listen to Home Sweet Home with me, Steve Bailey, Inspector with Brass Tack Home Inspections.
And I'm Pat Gregory, Handyman Extraordinaire with Taskman Home Improvements, every Friday at 11 a.m. Or you can go to our archives and get access to over 50 podcasts. We cover the basement to the attic and everything in between.
You can even call us at 908-237-0410 during our radio program about our home improvement projects. Remember, Home Sweet Home, every Friday at 11 on Hunterton Chamber Radio.
From the basement to the attic, you're listening to Stephen Patrick. Home sweet home.
Good morning. At 11:04, it's 45 degrees in Flemington, and it is chilly and cloudy. Forecast today is partly sunny, high of 56, which I highly doubt. There's a 40% chance of showers Friday with a high of 67. And Saturday and Sunday both look like they're going to be washouts, but the temperatures will be in the upper 60s and low 70s.
Are you looking to get your message in front of a qualified audience through all the noise out there today? Consider taking an advertisement out on Hunterton Chamber Radio, WHCR, DB, the voice of business. Contact the Chamber today at 908-782-7115 or give us an email at info@hunterton-chamber.org.
Good morning and welcome to the Library Show. I'm Jennifer Winberry. Jim Thatch is out today. I am not Jim Thatch, decidedly. And today we have a very special guest in the studio, Vasiliki Katsourou. How do you do?
Great.
Not bad, okay. Vasiliki is a local poet, and she's here because April is National Poetry Month. So we will talk with her a bit about her work, about some of the programs she has coming up, maybe about how she got started. And then we'll talk about some upcoming library programs. It's still National Library Week. If you haven't entered for the baskets at Headquarters North or South County Branch, there's still time to do that. They were donated by the Friends of the Hunterdon County Library. This afternoon at Headquarters, there's a Fred Miller concert, lectures and song. Fred will be talking about Harry Warren today. And tonight at the North County Branch Library, there is a Frank Sinatra impersonator. Elvis is not able to perform this evening. He was originally scheduled to be here, but something came up, and Frank will be here in his stead. So do stop in at the North County Branch Library to see Frank Sinatra. At Tewksbury, if you're up that way, you can learn to improve your poker game with a World Series of Poker player, Charlie Levine. The bookmobile will be in Bloomsbury today at 1:45. All that and more to celebrate Library Week. So welcome, Vasiliki.
Thank you, Jennifer. Thanks so much for having me.
Very happy to have you. Vasiliki used to do some programs with us at the library, and then we lost touch, as always happens. So, I do want to do one kind of back thing. I've been reading poems from a friend I've had in the UK since 1983, and jumpinjoulspoetry.com, and go to her website. She did a radio broadcast in the UK, and she's got the link up to that, so I've been reading some of her poems.
Okay, what sort of poems does she write?
She has MS.
Okay.
And she was diagnosed at a very young age. So she, a lot of her poems are very sombering or sober or with a little bit of hope in them.
Yes.
About going through life.
Yes. So they're not formal poems, they're free verse?
A lot of them are rhyme and formal. Yeah, they really are.
Okay.
So why don't you tell us a little bit about you talking?
Okay, well, so the sort of poetry that I write is more free verse. And it's very imagistic, and I have a background in film, and I feel like my poems are very informed by visual art. I have a monthly drop-in workshop at the Hunterdon Art Museum, and I have invited all sorts of emerging poets to come for prompts, for encouragement, for conversation with fellow community poets, and I've been doing that for the past 5 or 6 years. And I've been involved in poetry groups across the Delaware. There's one called No River Twice right now that is founded by an actor and a poet, and it's poetry improvisation. It involves 10 poets, and I'm among those. And there's interaction also with the audience. I recently did a poetry plus art opening show with the visual artist Ravenna Taylor, who has a studio in Lambertville, and I invited 7 poets to write poems to her paintings. So I do a lot, and I'm really grateful to be in such a vibrant, creative community here.
I'm just making sure I can hear you. How did you get started writing poetry? Because you have a degree in comparative literature.
I do. I wrote poetry even in high school. I worked on the school paper. I grew up speaking Greek and then English to Greek parents, and so I was always very aware of language, of things that can't be translated, of the etymology of language, and how English words often come from Greek or Latin. So I was always fascinated by language. I studied literature, and then after college, I moved to Paris, and I sort of wrote a lot of poetry on my own while working in the film industry there. So it wasn't until I made my way down here, had a little baby, and I started taking my poems out of the drawer and showing them to people. And I first hooked up with US One Poets Cooperative in Princeton, and that's a wonderful group that's been in existence since the early 70s, and I was so grateful to them for listening and making suggestions and treating my poems as real poems. So,
and we do have the US One chapbooks at the library.
That's great.
If anybody's interested in them, yes.
Yes. So I have my first published collection is called Memento Tsunami, and I'm really grateful to you for keeping it at the library in Flemington and Clinton. So that book was published by a small press in Princeton called Ragged Sky Press, and I've also worked with them to edit 2 poetry anthologies. So, I've done a lot of different things around poetry.
Can I go back to your film?
Sure.
It's Fruitlands.
Yes.
This story, which, and I loved it. It was so she showed at the library one year. It was beautiful.
Yeah,
and my sister's doing a PhD on, she was in between transcendental literature, and
yes,
it was the American literature of the late 19th century.
Mm-hmm.
She ended up with Moby Dick. Mm-hmm. But so the transcendentalists have always kind of been in the back, and it was a beautiful film. But could you
talk a little bit
about it?
Well, I love the transcendentalists. They inform my poetry even. And I grew up in New England, though I am Greek. And my husband and I moved to the town of Harvard, Massachusetts, where this utopian community took place in 1843. And I didn't know anything. I knew, of course, about Thoreau and Emerson in nearby Concord, but I didn't know that this community existed for a brief time literally sort of in the yard behind our yard. So I read a lot of the journals of the period by Bronson Alcott, Louisa May Alcott's father. They were both part of this community. And I realized there was a drama to the idealism of these writers and thinkers and philosophers who wanted to farm and didn't want to exploit animals and didn't want to eat sugar and wanted to only eat things that grew in the air and not in the ground. So it was like a proto-commune of a sort. So I was able to gather together a small crew and get a 35-millimeter camera under the auspices of Boston University, where I was a graduate student. And so my short film turned out to be 34 minutes long. but it was very satisfying working with actors and sort of putting these images I had in my head and these words and having them come to life, through the cooperation of so many people that are involved in a film.
Yeah. Okay, back to the poetry. I was reading your website,
yes.
OneGoldBeat.com.
Mm-hmm.
It's full of all your events, other events, some you're hosting, some you're writing, and your artistic statement.
Mm-hmm.
It was fascinating. It says a lot of your poems are sparked by a visual image.
Mm-hmm.
And your collection, without Memento Tsunami, it always makes me think of Memento Mori.
Yes.
Which is like a death thing.
It is.
Does that have any, or am I just obsessed with death?
You're right. It does hearken to that. And it was also very specifically written after, many of the poems, after a tsunami in Indonesia in the early 2000s. In the early 2000s, I guess it was. And I was playing with the idea of these two words from two different registers. There was memento, which is a Latinate Western European word, and tsunami, which is obviously an Eastern word. And basically, a lot of my poems I see as sort of fragments of two worlds that I'm trying to combine into one, and memory and literary artifact does that. So it's hard to sum up into words, but generally I had many different titles, but the Memento Tsunami was more trying to create a whole from East and West and from sort of disparate things to create a whole. I actually have a Coleridge quote that reflects this. Coleridge, who is an English Romantic poet, wrote that the imagination has the power to assemble the elements of experience into coherent, lively wholes. It has a gift. And those parts of our being that extend beyond the individual ego cannot survive unless they can be constantly articulated.
Okay. I'm like really bad at interpreting things, but I'm thinking that, and maybe this is, you expressed this earlier about your poetry,
mm-hmm.
that there's sort of a combination of all your experiences,
yeah.
or not all of your experience, but like you said, the disparate experiences.
Yes.
Which is one of my favorite words, and it drives Jim nuts when I use it. It
yeah.
comes across as desperate. But just like all these different images or different experiences.
Yes.
Or something tickles you and reminds you, oh, wait, this reminds me of this, but it's got nothing to do with this event or this.
Yes, and it's often an emotional experience that's really hard to put into words. It's something sort of liminal that it hovers sort of out of time and that you try to express it to yourself or to someone else, and it's difficult to do without, at least in my case, writing around it and trying to, write a poem about it. And so, yeah.
Okay. We're going to go to our first commercial break.
Okay.
And when we come back, I'm going to ask you if you would read something from your... It doesn't have to be from that collection. But
okay, my pleasure.
Okay, we'll be right back.
Advancing Hunterdon is an ever-sharp focus on the growth and prosperity of Hunterdon County's businesses. Advancing Hunterdon engages businesses within and throughout the county that are responsive to a call to action as the next chapter in business success. If your business and organization wants to get engaged, contact the Chamber today at 908-782-7115 or give us an email at info@hunterdon-chamber.org. Advancing Hunterdon, a roadmap for economic growth for the business community of Hunterdon. You're listening to WHCR-DB, HunterdonChamberRadio.com, brought to you by the Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce, the voice of business.
This is Tony Clark, para-planner at Patton Heide & Associates. Americans believe they should be in charge of their own future, how they will live tomorrow. Since 1894, Ameriprise Financial has worked for their clients' futures, helping millions of Americans retire on their terms, when they want, where they want, doing what they want. Today, Patton Heide & Associates, a financial advisory practice of Ameriprise Financial Services, Inc., remains true to the vision of always putting clients first. We are ready to help you put a confident retirement more within reach. Put the strength of a leader in retirement planning to work for you through a personal one-to-one relationship. Patton Heide & Associates will work with you to develop a plan to help you pursue your retirement goals. Call today at 908-713-6600. Office is located at 1318 Route 31 North, Annandale, New Jersey. Investment advisory products and services are made available through Ameriprise Financial Services, Inc., a registered investment advisor, Ameriprise Financial Services, Inc., member FINRA and SIPC.
I'm Andy Ross. I'm chairman of the Ambassadors Committee of the Chamber. As members of the Ambassadors Committee, we contact new and renewing members of the Chamber to get their feedback on their Chamber experience and make them feel more at home with the Chamber.
Hunterdon Chamber of Commerce, building business, one business at a time.
Welcome back to the Library Show. I'm Jennifer Winberry, and I have Vasiliki Katsaratsu. Close?
Katsaru.
Yes. I put an extra syllable in it. Sorry about that. And she's going to read us one of her poems.
Okay. So this poem is called Elements. Light, first source of fruit. Fruit, gifts of the tree and the sea. Sea, seek shelter in its shade. Let shade scissor light from dark. Weave a pattern of these elements and draw from them a home. Dance in its shadow. Time whirls through us demiurgically. Let the wind connect us to the tree. Let the rain connect us to the sea.
Very nice. Do you remember
what inspired this? Yeah. I actually wrote this poem and many poems when I was in Greece, specifically on an island that is my favorite one called Sifnos. And I was just very much observing light and shadow and leaves, and something connected all my impressions. And so I started writing, kept those notes and worked on them.
How many iterations does do your poems go?
At least seven. Some I sort of write out of existence. I mean, I think I kind of over-edit. So I've been trying to pull back and not do that so much. So there are other poems that, you know, I often write very short, and poems that have one or two or three versions, and then I'm done. And the more experience I get, the more that's the case. But yeah,
do you, without giving away your trade secrets, how do you, if somebody said, "I want to write a poem," do you say, "I want to write a poem" and sit down, or should it just come that you feel it?
You feel it. You definitely. It's an odd frame of mind. It's a poetic frame of mind. You know, it's like I mentioned before, it's in between emotions and in between ideas, and it's an in between state, you know, like a daydreaming kind of feeling that you have, like daydreaming while awake. So,
Did you write scraps of things in grammar school and high school? And
lots of scraps, lots of paper everywhere all around my office.
Now, do you have siblings?
I have one brother, yes.
And does he?
He similarly, he studied comparative literature and philosophy, and he's a professor up in at Amherst and Smith. Yeah.
So does he write poetry? Or no?
He has never told me. We don't really communicate on that subject of poetry so much. So he teaches and...
What does he teach?
He teaches history of ideas and different, like he did a sort of Cervantes and kind of a wide survey of literature this past semester, but literature in general, yeah.
Have you written other forms or tried other forms or...?
I have written screenplays and, you know, a little bit of prose that I keep in the drawer, but generally... It comes out as poems. I mean, I'm a person of not that many words, generally speaking. Like, well-chosen and well-placed words. That's how I see it.
There's some books out now. Mm-hmm. Jacqueline Woodson wrote one and that are written in verse.
Yes.
A lot of young adult or juvenile fiction.
Yes. I'm fascinated by that. And there's a very fine poet who's... regular short poems I enjoy a lot, Robin Robertson in England, I guess maybe he's Scottish. He won the Man Booker Prize, or he won a very large prize, maybe it's not the Man Booker, for a novel in verse. So I haven't actually looked at it, but I'm very curious. Yeah.
Do you have a favorite poet? I mean, I assume New Yorker is not the poetry you turn to. Yeah. Maybe it is, I don't know. They have some very fine poetry.
They have very fine poetry, definitely.
But your poems seem more ethereal, more...
Mm-hmm. Thank you. I do a lot. I mean, I read poets of the past, certainly. Sir Thomas Browne, for instance, or John Donne. But I, you know, I love Anne Carson as well. And I read very much the French poet Philippe Chacotet, whose work I've translated, you know, for myself. He does long lyrical essays as well. And I hope, you know, sometime to be able to share those with a wider audience.
Do you ever write poetry in another language?
Very briefly when I lived in France. I lived in France for 5 years, and I did write some poems in French. But it's an odd feeling because you do feel like you're another consciousness in another language. So it's almost like that was a different person. And they're not, I don't know, they were little snippets from the past that I haven't tried to translate or, you know, do anything with.
Do you? Yeah, I was thinking of the Albertine bookstore when you were talking about that. With the
it's lovely,
poet.
Yes.
Do you sometimes use poetry to remember, like the way people take snapshots, to remember a vacation, to remember a...
Yes. I mean, I suppose I do. I do take a lot of notes, and I do take a lot of pictures as well. Yeah, and I often write to a photograph, you know... I'm just very inspired and moved by the visual and form in general. So what is in a visual form, I sort of translate in my way to a verbal form.
Now, you get up in the morning, you drink your coffee, you read the time, and do you sit down and write, or is it more organic?
I do a lot of pacing, and I pick up and put down different drafts of various poems that I have. And I have so many that they sort of call to me. It's true. In the morning, I think of a particular poem that I wrote maybe 2 years ago, and I take that out because something has made it relevant, and I have some idea about it. So, I mean, in a way, it's very scattershot, but I feel like it's an accumulation that will make a whole at some point in the future, you know.
Do you remember all your poems?
I do somehow. They're all kind of in the little corners of my brain.
And how many... What percentage would you say has been published?
Ooh, that's a good question.
Is it a lot? Or?
What percentage? Probably 20%.
Okay. Yeah. So it's like people writing. Yeah. My sister has an MFA in poetry, and she went through the literary journal phase, Crab Creek, Horse something.
Uh-huh.
I'm forgetting what they
are.
There's
so many journals out there.
I know.
Ones, yeah.
Yeah, and I was really impressed because Ron Rash, who's a Southern author that I adore, he had a poem in one of her journals she was in, and I'm like, wow, this is pretty pretty impressive. Mm-hmm. So he translates very well between poetry and prose.
Yes.
I think. I don't know if you're familiar with him at all.
Not too much. I know the name, but...
Right. Yeah. It's, I like Southern.
Yes. Southern Gothic is the cliche, I guess.
It leans toward it, but it's a little bit more than that, I feel like.
Yep.
It's very deep South, almost an Appalachian feel, even though they're not all set in Appalachia.
Yes.
His prose, which is what I read first before. And then I realized he was a poet to begin with. Mm-hmm. What I know you, Rachel Krusk is a...
Rachel Cusk, yes.
Cusk, yeah.
I do love her work and the trilogy, and especially the first volume called Outline. And she writes in a very spare fashion, and she has gotten more spare over the years, and there's something just very meditative and philosophical about her work, and specifically on feminist issues, and you know, it feels very existential, and I was really thrilled to get to hear her speak about it in New York last week. Yeah.
Are there other prose authors that you really enjoy, or not so much?
I do, of course I do. You know, I'm trying to think. I haven't read...
If you asked me my favorite authors, I could not come up with any, so I don't mean to.
You know, I mean, I certainly love the classics. Like, I've gone back to Henry James just reading short stories, actually. I love the novels, and I found them just very rich with ideas for poetry. So I was looking at the short stories recently, but... I don't know. I'll have to think about it.
Yeah,
I graze over a lot of different writing, and I end up landing on poetry a lot. Yeah.
Do you edit a lot of anthologies, or?
I have, and I think I will do that again at some point in the future because I've come to know so many poets, both in the area and, you know, widely in Greece or in England, and I would like to be able to put them together, possibly in a different project. Yeah.
Now, in my mind, editing an anthology would be a two-part step, that you would edit the individual poems, but then try to put them together
in a felicitous order, where with added, you know, there's an added significance and meaning if you read along through the chapters of an anthology.
Right.
So there's not too much editing of the individual poems. It's more how you put it together and what the vision is for the whole thing. Yeah.
Now, are you still involved in the... Princeton, the Route 1? No, they're not
the
Route
1.
The U.S. one.
I certainly know many, many of the wonderful poets there, and I've gotten down to Princeton less and less over the years, but I'd like to think that I am, yeah.
Yeah, because you had organized an event at the library more years ago than I'm embarrassed to admit, and it was really wonderful to have a variety of poets there.
Right.
Are you a fan of open mic poetry?
I'm a fan. I mean, it serves an important function, and poets want to hear their words and how they are taken up by the audience, and hear their poems embodied right on the air. So I think it's useful. It brings the community together of writers. Yeah.
Are poems meant to be read or to be spoken? Mm-hmm. Or
It depends who you ask. I do believe
I'm asking.
That poetry. I believe poems are sort of, in a certain sense, very private, and you hear the poet's voice in your ear silently, and it sort of goes directly into your heart, like just quick and intense. But there are certainly plenty of poets who read for performance, who write with a lot of rhythm and verve and song, and you know, that's another kind of wonderful poetry, and it really depends on your taste.
You said you mostly write free verse.
Yes.
Are there guidelines, or are there, do you just put words? You know, like haiku, I get a tanka, a sonnet.
Yes. Well, free verse, like I mentioned, it's often very imagistic. There's often a lot of rhythm and rhyme, but it not obviously, like slant rhyme, sort of internal rhyme. And there's a lot of significance to the line breaks of the poem, and often even the look of the poem on the page in the white space. So there are other factors that enter into it, besides the very obvious form, which can be wonderful, but it's I don't know, my poems are not like that. Yeah.
Do you suggest studying with someone, doing workshops or taking a full length class?
All those things are good. I mean, if you can find a teacher, an encouraging mentor, in-depth, like a weekend workshop in New York, there's certainly many at Poets House, for instance. The more you share with others and see, what is communicated by your work and what's possible, and you just feel more inspiration, and you also feel like there might be a deadline for you, a reading coming up, or a workshop that you need to produce work for, and that just spurs you on. So, yeah.
What do you think? A lot of people hear poetry. What do you think the obstacle or the impediment is that people? Do you think people think they're not? Like, I'm not getting it. It's not.
Yes, I think it's a big misunderstanding that they were taught a certain way in elementary school. These are the classic poems. You need to interpret them a certain way, and that's it. It's just sort of like dead on the page. You learned it, and you're moving on. But, for me, poetry is a huge freedom, of expression and of connection. And, it kind of ties you to others because you realize, oh, I feel that same thing. I understand what is being gotten at with that poem. So there's a lot of freedom in expression in poetry.
Is it okay if somebody heard that or read that poem that you just read, if they got something completely different?
Yes,
of course.
Yes.
You're from Massachusetts, New England.
Right.
Emily Dickinson?
I love Emily Dickinson. Okay. She's a huge, an early influence. Yes, absolutely. Yeah.
How about Sylvia Plath? Who's one of my favorite because going back to the dead thing.
I know. Yes. Well, I mean, so, of course, Sylvia Plath's work is very influential, and I don't read it now as I did when I was in my 20s, but I mean, she was a very bold poet and formalist.
Yeah. Mid-20th century is very appealing.
Yeah.
Do you read other people's poems if you're working on one, or try not to, or...?
I've gone through various phases. I've read a lot of contemporary poetry in the past 10 years, just since I've been editing anthologies. So I've read a lot.
Your website has a lot of events coming up.
Mm-hmm.
Are there any that you want to point out?
Well, I want to point out this coming Sunday at the Hunterdon Art Museum at 2 o'clock, we're having a group reading. It's all the members of my workshop, the monthly drop-in workshop, and there will be an open mic and refreshments. And on Tuesday night in Barnardsville at the library, there is another group reading of poets who have been published by Tiferet magazine. And that's at 7 o'clock, I believe. And there's a few others. There's one, I mentioned No River Twice. There will be a reading at Bucks County Community College. That's 10 poets, and the audience gets to participate and help lead where the poetry reading goes. That's on the 19th.
Do you a poetry slam?
Yes.
Or I always think of it as we write a group poem.
Yes, that you're writing a group poem.
Yeah, but
no, I think.
But do you do something like that? I mean, a poetry slam. I guess it's more of an open mic.
It's more of an open mic, and it's more of a competitive kind of performance situation. Right, that's not what I do.
But do you ever do? Well, do you ever teach school children or younger children?
High school age, okay. I have. As a Dodge poet, I did go to several high schools and do a program with high schoolers.
But have you ever done like a collaborative poem with a group?
I've tried that at Hunterdon Art Museum a little bit with the members who come. Nothing that, if I can think of, that's been published, yeah.
Okay. Do you want to do another?
Another reading?
Sure. Well, she's thumbing her pages. I will say again, this is the Library Show, and I'm Jennifer Winberry. Jim Thatch is sitting today out, and I'm sitting with Vasiliki Katsaro.
All right. So this is a more recent poem. It's called The First Summer. The first summer, we found cuttlefish bones on the beach. The second summer, a pirate's bounty of silver sea stones. The third summer, white cats in a basket, a mother's prayer. The fourth summer, a cask of winds, Vorinos, Meltemi, Capellatos, Careclas. Soon after came the rains and the fasts. I lost my hat, turned up at a crossroads, at the center of the center of the island town.
Greek, your Greek yes. island again.
Yes.
Were you sitting in a...
I was probably sitting by the water, and I think that sort of the atmosphere of an island is, it's a little bit of a crossroads, and it's like a utopian moment in that you feel a little bit outside of time, and there are groups of people from every place and not just Greece, and not, there are kind of people passing through from everywhere, and there's a lot of tradition, but there's also a lot of sort of looking out towards the future, towards the horizon, and there's just something very meditative for me about that.
Do you walk around with scraps of paper in your pocket to write things down on, or do you jot notes on a phone?
No, I don't jot notes on a phone. Under duress, I will jot notes down on a phone, but I do have paper, notebooks, little notebooks I have had for maybe 20 years, actually, in my different locations,
Do you keep them all?
I do have them all, and occasionally I look through and I'll find, a poem sitting there, yeah.
So you're doing a book launch at the end of the month?
Yes, I am actually supporting a book launch of a friend, John Wall Barger, and that's at a bookshop in Philadelphia, past Yonk Avenue. I think the bookshop is called The Novel Idea. It's mm-hmm. a new bookshop.
Yeah, which is really exciting.
It is very exciting. Remind me, I think the date is the 23rd?
The 24th.
It's the 24th. It's the Wednesday night. Yep.
Yes. So these events on your website. People yes. just show yes. up and...
Yes, just, yeah. I mean, all the events are basically free and open to all, and my website is onegoldbead.com.
Okay. How about we do the last commercial break, and then we'll come up with something for the last 15 minutes.
Are you struggling to find the right person to stay in a critical role in your company? Trying to attract and retain millennials? Regional Personnel is your staffing solution. Located in Lebanon, New Jersey, Regional Personnel is an ASA-certified, privately held staffing and recruiting firm providing you with everything from temporary to permanent employees. As ASA-certified professionals, we employ the latest tools and techniques to find, screen, and present to you the best talent that fits your needs. The result? Access to top talent in the shortest time with the lowest chance of turnover. We guarantee it. So call Regional today at 908-534-8113 or visit us on the web at regionalpersonnel.com.
Did you know that 1 in 5 people are affected by mental illness? NAMI Hunterdon is the locally affiliate for NAMI, the National Alliance on Mental Illness. We are all volunteers, and all our programs are free of charge. We offer Family to Family, a 12-week course for families that have an adult member with a mental illness. Another popular program is In Our Own Voice, where individuals who are living with mental illness discuss their challenges and their progress in overcoming those challenges. Another course we offer is Basics, a 6-week course for families with a child or an adolescent who has experienced mental illness. We also have a monthly support group for families on the third Thursday of every month. Please call NAMI Hunterdon at 908-284-0500 for more information about any of our programs or to join. NAMI Hunterdon, the voice for mental health in Hunterdon County.
Hunterdon Medical Center was started by families for families. Inside our circle of care, we offer coordinated care for your entire family, led by our outstanding family medicine physicians and specialists. Hunterdon Healthcare, your full circle of care. If you need a physician, call Hunterdon Medical Center's Physician Referral Service at 1-800-511-4HMC or visit us on the web at www.huntertonhealthcare.org.
Everybody over there!
Get on up!
Everybody out there!
Get into it!
Everybody right there!
Get involved!
Everybody, you!
Did you know? The Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce has over 20 active committees that you can participate in. Committees range from focus on business and government to economic development to events like our annual business expo. Contact the Chamber for more information today at 908-782-7115 or email us at info@hunterdon-chamber.org. The Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce, the voice of business.
Welcome back to the Library Show. I'm Jennifer Winbury, and I'm speaking with Vasiliki Katsaru.
Great.
I'm getting better each time. Mm-hmm. I'm going to ask Vasiliki to read a few more poems. But if you wanted to hear really good poetry,
yes.
I obviously go to your readings and things, but where else can people go to hear?
Yes.
If they want to start, like they think, oh, I think I want to write a poem or I want to learn
right.
more about it.
Well, definitely Poets House, which is near Battery Park City that I mentioned, and the 92nd Street Y is a great place as well. I think Drew University has an MFA program, and they have sort of ongoing programs. Where else? There are many, many places to hear poetry.
There used to be, and I don't know if they're still active. I should have looked before, but up in Frenchtown, there used to be pretty active.
Yes. Well, I mean, like Art Yard, for instance, currently, this
right,
wonderful, you know, gallery space, and they have film, and they have some poetry programs there as well that are curated by Stephanie Smith, and, you know, I think that would be wonderful to look out for poetry there, yeah.
Right, because, and do you think poetry and art sort of go well together?
Yes,
I think. Feel like you did I feel like there was something in the past that you did with art and poetry.
Well, I was about to read this poem called Glory Ibis, and so this poem was written in response to an artwork by Ravenna Taylor, who is a local visual artist who has a studio in Lambertville, and she lives in Delaware Township. And she opened her studio, and she invited me to invite poets to respond to this a new series of works that she had, which were collaged, and they were paint on paper. And they were very particular, unlike all her other work, basically. A lot of dark ochre work. I mean, in general, she's an abstract artist. So my contribution to this event was this poem, Glory Ibis. And actually, the title was, it pre-existed the poem. So somewhere in the course of one of my days, I just sort of thought of this, and I didn't understand what it meant to me even. I wrote it down, and I kept staring at it. So I'll read the poem and then I'll explain a little more. Glory Ibis. I waited in a cave, a bodice, a strap, a tearing asunder. Rosy corrosion, bungled burlap, a bowl of soiled linens. A dab, a smudge, a mud flat, a midge, a mite, mosquito net of night. A twinkle, a red star, a nova, inner earth flamed, lava licked, iron flowered. 7 days and nights, 7 shifts of smoke, charred bone and onyx turned to maps of distant fires. Clad in singed cloth, blue blood bled red, wings of red ochre insist, take color equations and make heroic torsos. So the title, Glory Ibis, the ibis is this sacred bird in Egyptian mythology, and it was the animal that symbolized the god of writing and knowledge. And I guess somewhere in the back of my mind I knew this, but it's just a very weird little word of 4 letters as well. And the fact that there was so much red ochre in Ravenna's work got me thinking about cave paintings, and that's basically where the poem, how it came about.
Because when I think of caves, I think of very dark, dank, but to have red in there.
Yeah, dark red.
Yeah. Very warming, very... And I wouldn't. When you first said red, I thought, I wondered if you could even see red in a cave.
Well, you certainly can in the caves in France. I mean, those drawings are kind of in red, right? And they're even handprints and things like that, yeah.
So, Have you ever told anybody, you know, they've come to one of your workshops and you just tell them, don't quit your day job?
No.
Or do you think it's okay as long as they write and mm-hmm. they just keep writing and even if...
Yes, I do think that. I do, because poetry, provide something for the individual, whether that person sticks it in a drawer like I did for many years, like my poems, or reads them out loud to someone. It's a way of organizing your thoughts, of sort of, it gives you an anchor into the living language that is, you know, part of our shared culture, and I just feel like it, I hate to say it, but I do think there's something therapeutic about writing things down. And
I wrote cathartic.
Cathartic, exactly. Yeah.
But they could be joyous.
Yes.
As well.
Yes, yes.
Are there any poems that are so personal that you don't share them with?
Yes. Yeah, it's, in a pile on my desk somewhere, but, I go back to it, and I'd like to think that maybe some years hence, I will have found just the right form.
Okay, so if anybody's listening, who is it? Because people are listening. but if they're interested in contacting you to do workshops or
absolutely. I can give you my email as well.
There's a contact on your webpage.
There is a web, yep.
Yeah, exactly. And I will tweet out, when I tweet out the link to the show, I will make sure I include your website.
Okay, perfect.
And I did tag you in the tweet this morning. And
I think
there's a link on the
on
the website. Mm-hmm. So somebody's listening and they've wanted to write poetry or get.
Yeah.
What'd you tell them to do? Seek out one of these workshops? Or?
Keep writing and write regularly. Buy a lot of notebooks. I personally prefer all blank pages so that you can write in every direction and possibly doodle and do other things that kind of spark, different ways of thinking.
Do you have a particular one you like, or do you like fantasy notebooks?
I just like them to be blank. Blank and fairly large and, squared or rectangular, but not too heavy, because here again, like if you're going from place to place,
Right.
Yeah.
You don't care what the cover looks like.
Well, I like it to be fairly blank, like, not too many patterns and not too heavy, like a super hardcover.
Do you see yourself in 50 years writing, continuing to write, or how do you see your career evolving, I guess?
50 years is a long time.
I know, yeah. I said that, and I'm like, wait, you don't have 50 years left here.
Yeah, I'd like, I hope to publish another book or two. That would be wonderful, and just to continue to write and to continue to help others and help them along with their work as well. Yeah.
Do you, in the internet and the communication, Mary Norris and I talked about it a couple of weeks ago, about these abbreviations and the short things. Do you think there's any value in that, like the shortening of words or the HBU for how about you?
Like text style vocabulary.
Yeah, I know, I guess maybe 10 years back, 15 years back, there was a big thing, I remember it was China or Japan, where young women were writing entire books on their phones.
That's fascinating, yeah.
And
very ephemeral. I mean, I don't know. Has anyone kind of collected all that and kept it?
Yeah, so you haven't seen like a technology poet, like technological poetry or something like that?
I'm sure it exists, for
but
sure.
It's not,
But it's not something that I'm drawn to particularly, yeah. I mean, I do know of a poet who's wonderful, Fadi Juda. I recommend his work, Joudah, and he's written a book called Text 2, which is very short poems and 160 characters, and he was modeling it on the Twitter tweet, the text format maximum.
Right. Well, and Twitter used to have a maximum prior to
that's right.
the current administration.
So, exactly,
Is there a length that you think poems should not exceed?
Oh, I could never say that. No.
I mean, because the ancient Greeks, they're, to me, I guess there's some that say that Homer is a
poet.
Oh,
yes,
yeah.
Absolutely. Yes, it's a novel length, long epic. I know that my poems tend toward one page or less. So when I go over a page and a half, I think, oh, this is a very long poem. But, you know, everyone is different, and it's a very idiosyncratic thing. It's sort of the length of your voice, you know, your particular verbal habit. So it's hard to make a prescription like that.
Because I know I'm not streaming this today, so people cannot see, but your paper is very clean, very...
A lot of white space,
yeah. Very short phrases.
Yes.
And I'm just envisioning, like, Walt Whitman, like, chunks of paragraphs.
Yes.
Almost.
Yes.
So who would you, if you've sparked an interest in anyone, who would you think they should read? Or how would they go about picking a poet to read?
Well, since this is the library show, head to your local library and pick up, you know, some, there are certainly books that have been published, you know, the 14-day books that are current poets, and see if there's something that appeals to you, but also go back to the stacks and pull some things out, you know, read a poem here and there by different authors, because there are many, many different styles, you know, and you don't know until you start doing a little bit of reading. Yeah.
The more formal, the haiku, the limerick, do you ever do that?
You made
a face with limerick.
Haiku, I do write haiku, actually, yeah. Yes. And there's a wonderful journal called Bottle Rockets that has published some of my haiku. But haiku is, you know, it's not necessarily 575 in English. So, although, so anything under 20 syllables, basically, in English would be considered haiku if it's particular, you know, and it has a seasonal reference and it's lyrical in that particular imagistic way. So...
But do you find forms like that too limiting to...
Haiku I don't find limiting at all, actually. That's I'm drawn to short forms like that. But otherwise, yes, although I've experimented with some, you know, broken sonnets and things like that, because it's such a classic form and 14 lines. I find that I have a lot of poems that fall into the 14-line length without exactly being a sonnet, yeah.
Not the ABBA.
Right, not necessarily that. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay, we're coming to close to the end. Mm-hmm. Did you want to read one more? And I do want to do one program note. Next week, Jim Thatch may be flying solo. I have a rescheduled meeting that may run past 11 o'clock. So go easy on him next week, please.
All right, great. So I'll read this poem, Verge. Again, this was sort of written in response to an abstract painting. There was a gallery show in Pittsburgh a few years ago, and I was invited to write a poem for that. So, okay, Verge. Blue flames out on a ground of gold, and the dismantled virgin cloaks her own decoction. Red fruit and likely black leaf rot is the fraught ground of most wisdom. All flaws bloom lately on the demented cheek of the virgin crowned now with blue bachelor buttons. Don't fret that we sought flaws, not flowers, dots, not bowers, nor dowry. Search the underbrush for the one undying branch that sprouts its omega leaves.
What did the painting or the piece of art dream?
It was had very vibrant colors, and it had a lot of bright blue and bright red, sort of reminiscent of a branch or a blossom. It was just a wonderful sort of reverie that I had in front of this painting. So, yeah.
Do all your poems have titles?
For the most part.
Do you suggest that people do that, or just whatever?
Untitled is perfectly fine as well. I want to tell people that if you're looking to title your poem, don't give the poem away in the title, you know, and don't use a phrase or a line that is sort of the climax of the poem as the title of the poem.
You know? Is it okay to use another, like if you used bachelor buttons?
Yes. Uh-huh.
Is that
okay?
Yeah. Not okay, but is that, or would you...
I like for the title to add something further, right?
Okay.
Yeah.
I hear Jim Gannot, who does taking care of business next, Do you have any last words of wisdom? Any last thoughts? I want to thank you very much.
Jennifer, thank you. Yes.
Oh, thank you. It was
happy
really
Poetry Month, yes.
Yeah, I'm really glad you reached out to me after the Mary Norris interview, and I said, wait.
I'm thrilled to come after this Mary Norris. Yes, thank you.
This is really wonderful. And, yeah, I'm not going to lose track of you this time. We're going to have you back at the library to do some sort of something.
Okay, that's a date.
Yeah.
All right.
Super. So thank you very much for listening to the Library Show. Jim Gano is out in the hall chomping at the bit to come in. Remember, wherever you are, you can call, stop in, or go online. Your library is always there for you. Until next week.
The news is sponsored by the Hunterdon Medical Center. Hunterdon Medical Center was started by families for families. Inside our circle of care, we offer coordinated care for your entire family, led by our outstanding family medicine physicians and specialists. Hunterdon Healthcare, your full circle of care. If you need a physician, call Hunterdon Medical Center's Physician Referral Service at 1-800-511-4-HMC or visit us on the web at www.hunterdonhealthcare.org.
USA Radio News with Chris Barnes.
Co-founder of WikiLeaks, Julian Assange, arrested in London and hauled out of the Ecuadorian embassy where he's been holed up for about 7 years. He's being extradited to the United States, where he'll face computer hacking conspiracy charges for releasing secret government documents. Getting some reaction now on Capitol Hill, independent senator from Maine, Angus King, says,
I think he's been involved in the effectively as an agent of the Russian intelligence agencies, and I think we have a vital interest in understanding his role in that process.
Democratic Congresswoman Ilhan Omar sparking outrage again, this time for referring to the 9/11 attacks as something that some people did. One of the first two Muslim women elected to the House making the remark last month in L.A. at an event hosted by the Council of American Islamic Relations. And this is USA Radio News.
Today, business happens here, here, and virtually anywhere. Because today, innovative companies are reinventing the way business happens. And they need people who can keep up. With the expertise and technology to get packages to over 150 million delivery points. So, who can help you deliver the future of commerce? The United States Postal Service. See why we deliver more e-commerce packages to homes than anyone at usps.com/future.
The great thing about facts, they're proven. Like the fact that crude oil contains impurities. Or that base oil made from natural gas is 99.5% free of impurities. And the fact that Pennzoil is the first synthetic motor oil made from natural gas, not crude oil. It gives you unbeatable engine protection. The proof is in the Pennzoil. Based on Sequence 4A wear test using SAE 5W30. Available on Amazon.
Weekly jobless claims are down again. Figures just out from the Labor Department show 196,000 first-time claims for unemployment last week, 8,000 fewer than the previous week. And the number is the lowest since October of 1969. The president's leveling new accusations against Democrats, saying their stance on the southern border is treasonous. He tweets this morning, their open border mindset is putting our country at risk. A suspect's been arrested in connection with a string of fires at predominantly black churches in a Louisiana parish. Reports are police arrested the 21-year-old son of a St. Landry parish deputy. There were three fires in 10 days at historically black churches. The state's fire marshal, Butch Browning, says it's inconceivable.
These are buildings that people worship in on a regular basis, but there's been weddings here, there's been funerals here, there's been children who are raised here.
And this is USA Radio News.
The best sleep of my life has been since I got a MyPillow and since I got my Giza Dream sheets. I have to tell you, I've slept in some great hotels in my time, but nothing like these Giza Dreams sheets. Now go to MyPillow.com, click on the Giza Dreams sheets special, you'll find out all about them, and use my promo code USA to get 30% off and free shipping. Go to MyPillow.com, click on the Giza Dreams sheets special, use my promo code USA.
Democrats are still criticizing Attorney General William Barr for saying the FBI spied on the Trump campaign in 2016. During a Senate hearing yesterday, Barr did revise his remark later, saying there was unauthorized surveillance. California Democrat Adam Schiff putting out a statement saying that the top law enforcement officer of the country should not casually suggest that those under his purview engaged in spying on a political campaign. The Washington Post is asking a federal court to dismiss a $250 million libel suit brought by a Kentucky high schooler. Covington High School student Nicholas Sandman claims the paper's coverage of him and his fellow students' confrontation with an American Indian activist in January was defamatory and false. In its motion to dismiss the suit, the Post says its stories were accurate and the teen has no cause of action for libel against the newspaper. Sandman has also sued CNN for defamatory coverage. And Disney is set to unveil details.